Chapter 23. The Fifth I Give You. Raining mist around on a grassy hilltop, Egwene watched the streams of Aiel coming down from the Jangai Pass. The saddle had pushed her skirts above her knees again, but she hardly noticed that now. She could not spend every minute fussing with them, and she had on stockings. It was not as though she were bare-legged. In trotting columns, the Aiel flowed by below her, arranged by clan and sept and society. Thousands upon thousands with their pack horses and mules, the Gai Shine who would tend the camps while the rest fought, spreading a mile wide, and more still in the pass or already out of sight ahead. Even without families it seemed a nation on the march. The silk path had been a road here, a full 50 paces wide and paved with broad white stones, slicing straight through hills carved to make a level. Only occasionally was it visible through the mass of Aiel, although they seemed to prefer running on the grass, but many of the paving stones had lifted up at a corner or sunk down at one end. More than 20 years had gone by since this road had carried more than local farmers' carts and a handful of wagons. It was startling to see trees again, real trees, towering oaks and leather leaf in actual thickets, rather than an occasional wind-twisted, stunted shape, and tall grass waving in the breeze across the hills. There was real forest to the north, and clouds in the sky, thin and high, yet clouds. The air seemed blessedly cool after the waste, and moist, though brown leaves and large brown swaths through the grass told her that in reality it might be hotter and drier than usual for the time of year. Still, the countryside of Kyrian was a lush paradise compared to the other side of the Dragon Wall. A small stream meandered north beneath a nearly flat bridge, bordered by the dried clay of a broader bed. The river Galen lay not too many miles away in that direction. She wondered what the Aiel would make of that river. She had seen Aiel near a river once before. The shrunken band of water marked a definite break in the steady flow of people, as men and maidens paused to stare in amazement before leaping across. Kader's wagons rumbled by on the road, the long mule teams working hard but still losing ground to the Aiel. It had taken 4 days to traverse the twists and turns of the pass, and Rand apparently intended to go as far into Kyrian as he could in the few hours of daylight remaining. Moiraine and Lan rode with the wagons, not ahead of them, or even with Kader's box-like little white house on wheels, but alongside the second wagon, where the canvas-covered shape of the door-frame Turangrial made a hump above the rest of the load. Some of the load was wrapped carefully, or packed in boxes or barrels that Kader had brought into the waste full of his goods, and some was simply stuck in wherever it would fit. Odd shapes of metal and glass, a red crystal chair, 2 child-sized statues of a nude man and woman, rods of bone and ivory and strange black materials in varying lengths and thicknesses. All sorts of things, including some Egwene could hardly begin to describe. Moiraine had used every inch of space in all of the wagons. Egwene wished that she knew why the Aes Sedai was so concerned with that particular wagon. Perhaps no one else had noticed that Moiraine paid it more attention than all the others combined, but she had. Not that she was likely to find out any time soon. Her newfound equality with Moiraine was a tender thing, as she had learned when she asked that question in the heart of the pass, and was told that her imagination was too vivid, and if she had time to spy on the Aes Sedai, perhaps Moiraine should speak to the Wise Ones about intensifying her training. She had apologized profusely, of course, and the soft words seemed to have worked. Amis and the others were not taking any more of her nights than they had before. 100 or so Tardad Fardaris Mai went trotting by on her side of the road, moving easily, veils hanging but ready to be donned, full quivers at hips. Some carried their curved horn bows, arrows nocked, while others had their bows cased on their backs, spears and bucklers swinging rhythmically as they ran. At their rear, 12 Gai Shine in their white robes leading pack mules struggled to keep up. One wore black, not white. Isendre labored hardest of all. Egwene could pick Adolin out, and two or three others who had been guarding Rand's tent the night of the attack. Each clutched a doll in addition to her weapons, a rough-made doll clothed in full skirts and white blouse. They looked even more stone-faced than usual, trying to pretend that they held no such thing. She was not sure what that was about. The maidens who stood that guard had come in a group to see Bear and Amice when their stint was done, and had spent a long time with them. The next morning, while camp was still breaking in the grayness before dawn, they had begun making those dolls. She had not been able to ask, of course, but she had commented on it to one, a red-haired Tomanel of the Sarai Sept named Myra, and the woman said it was to remind her that she was not a child. Her tone made it clear that she did not want to talk. One of the maidens carrying a doll was no more than 16, yet Myra was at least as old as Adolin. It made little sense, and that was frustrating. Every time Egwene thought she understood Aiel ways, something demonstrated that she did not. Despite herself, her eyes were drawn back to the mouth of the pass. The row of stakes was still there, just visible, stretching from steep mountain slope to steep mountain slope, except where Aiel had kicked some of them down. Cooladin had left another message. Men and women impaled across their path, standing there 7 days dead. The tall gray walls of Selene clung to the hills at the right of the pass, nothing showing above them. Moiraine said it had held only a shadow of its one-time glory, yet it had still been a considerable town, much larger than Tyen. No more remained of it, however. No survivors either, except whoever the Shido had carried off, although here some had probably run for places they thought safe. There had been farms on these hills. Most of eastern Kyrian had been abandoned after the Aiel War, but a town needed farms for food. Now soot-streaked chimneys thrust up from blackened stone farmhouse walls. Here a few charred rafters remained above a stone barn. There barn and farmhouse had collapsed from the heat. The hill where she sat missed saddle had been sheep pasture. Near the fence at the foot of the hill, flies still buzzed over the refuse of butchering. Not an animal remained in any pasture, not a chicken scratching in a barnyard. The crop fields were burned stubble. Cooladin and the Shido were Aiel, but so were Avienda and Bear and Amice and Milane and Ruark, who said she reminded him of one of his daughters. They had been disgusted at the impalements, yet even they seemed to think it little more than the tree-killers deserved. Perhaps the only way to truly know the Aiel was to be born Aiel. Casting a last glance at the destroyed town, she rode slowly down to the rough stone fence and let herself out of the gate, leaning down to refasten the rawhide thong out of habit. The irony was that Moiraine had said that Selene might actually go over to Cooladin. In the shifting currents of Desdemar, in balancing an Aiel invader against a man who had sent Tyrens into Kyrian for whatever reason, the decision could have tipped either way had Cooladin given them a chance to choose. She rode along the broad road until she caught up with Rand, in his red coat today, and joined Avienda and Amice and 30 or more wise ones she barely knew besides the other two dreamwalkers, all following at a short distance. Matt, with his hat and his black hafted spear, and Jason Natale, leather-cased harp slung on his back and crimson banner rippling in the breeze, were riding, but hurrying Aiel passed the party by on both sides, because Rand led his dapple stallion, talking with the clan chiefs. Skirts or no skirts, the wise ones would have made a good job of keeping up with the passing columns if they were not sticking to Rand like pine sap. They barely glanced at Egwene, their eyes and ears focused on him and the six chiefs. "And whoever comes through after Timolan," Rand was saying in a firm voice, "has to be told the same thing." Stone dogs left to watch at Tyen had returned to report the Mayagoma entering the pass a day behind. "I've come to stop Cooladin despoiling this land, not to loot it." "A hard message," Bale said. "For us as well, if you mean we cannot take the fifth." Han and the rest, even Ruark, nodded. "The fifth I give you." Rand did not raise his voice, yet suddenly his words were driven nails. "But no part of that is to be food. We will live on what can be found wild or hunted or bought, if there is anyone with food to sell, until I can have the Tyrans increase what they're bringing up from Tyr. If any man takes a penny more than the fifth, or a loaf of bread without payment, if he burns so much as a hut because it belongs to a tree killer, or kills a man who is not trying to kill him, that man will I hang, whoever he is." "Dark to tell the clans this," Diarik said, almost as stony. "I came to follow he who comes with the dawn, not to coddle oath-breakers." Bale and Jiran opened their mouths as if to agree, but each saw the other and snapped his teeth shut again. "Mark what I said, Diarik," Rand said. "I came to save this land, not ruin it further. What I say stands for every clan, including the Mayagoma, and any more who follow. Every clan, you mark me well." This time no one spoke, and he swung back into Jiaideen's saddle, letting the stallion walk on among the chiefs. Those Aiel faces showed no expression. Egwene drew breath. Those men were all old enough to be his father and more, leaders of their people as surely as kings for all they disclaimed it, hardened leaders in battle. It seemed only yesterday that he had been a boy in more than age, a youth who asked and hoped, rather than commanded and expected to be obeyed. He was changing faster than she could keep up with now. A good thing, if he kept these men from doing to other cities what Cooladin had done to Tyan and Salian. She told herself that. She only wished he could do it without showing more arrogance every day. How soon before he expected her to obey him as Moiraine did? Or all Aes Sedai? She hoped it was only arrogance. Wanting to talk, she kicked a foot free of its stirrup and held a hand down for Avienda, but the Aiel woman shook her head. She really did not like to ride. And maybe all those wise ones striding in a pack made her reluctant, too. Some of them would not have ridden had both their legs been broken. With a sigh, Egwene climbed down, leading Mist by the reins, settling her skirts a little grumpily. The soft, knee-high Aiel boots she wore looked comfortable and were, but not for walking very far on that hard, uneven pavement. "He truly is in command," she said. Avienda barely shifted her eyes from Rand's back. "I do not know him. I cannot know him. Look at the thing he carries." She meant the sword, of course. Rand did not precisely carry it. It hung at the pommel of his saddle in a plain scabbard of brown boar hide, the long hilt covered in the same leather, rising as high as his waist. He had had hilt and scabbard made by a man from Tyan on the journey through the pass. Egwene wondered why, when he could channel a sword of fire and do other things that made swords seem toys. "You did give it to him, Avienda." Her friend scowled. "He tries to make me accept the hilt, too. He used it. It is his. Used it in front of me as if to mock me with a sword in his hand." "You are not angry about the sword." She did not think Avienda was. She had not said a word about it that night in Rand's tent. "You are still upset over how he spoke to you, and I do understand. I know he is sorry. He sometimes speaks without thinking, but if you would only let him apologize..." "I do not want his apologies," Avienda muttered. "I do not want... I can bear this no more. I cannot sleep in his tent any longer." Suddenly she took Egwene's arm, and if Egwene had not known better, she would have thought her on the brink of tears. "You must speak to them for me. To Amys and Bear and Merlane. They will listen to you. You are Aes Sedai. They must let me return to their tents. They must." "Who must do what?" Cerulea said, dropping back from the others to walk alongside them. The wise one of Shenda Hold had thin white hair and a face like leather drawn tight over her skull, and clear green eyes that could knock a horse down at 10 paces. That was the way she normally looked at anyone. When Cyrilia was angry, other wise ones sat quietly, and clan chiefs made excuses to leave. Milane and another wise one, a graying black water Nakai, started to join them too, until Cyrilia turned those eyes on them. "If you were not so busy thinking of that new husband, Milane, you would know Amis wants to talk with you. You also, Aaron." Milane flushed bright red and scurried back to the others, but the older woman got there first. Cyrilia watched them go, then put her full attention on Avienda. "Now we can have a quiet talk. So you do not want to do something. Something you were told to do, of course. And you think this child Aes Sedai can get you out of doing it." "Cyrilia, I..." Avienda got no further. "In my day, girls jumped when a wise one said jump, and continued jumping until they were told to stop. As I am still alive, it is still my day. Need I make myself clearer?" Avienda took a deep breath. "No, Cyrilia," she said meekly. The old woman's eyes came to rest on Egwene. "And you? Do you think you are going to beg her off?" "No, Cyrilia." Egwene felt as though she should curtsy. "Good," Cyrilia said, not sounding satisfied, just as if it was what she had expected. It almost certainly was. "Now I can speak to you of what I really want to know. I hear the Karakarn has given you an interest gift like no other ever heard of. Rubies and moondrops." Avienda jumped as if a mouse had run up her leg. Well, she probably would not, but it was the way Egwene would have jumped in that circumstance. The Aiel explained about Layman's sword and the scabbard so hastily that her words tripped over one another. Cyrilia shifted her shawl, muttering about girls touching swords even wrapped in blankets, and about having a sharp word with young bear. "So he has not captured your eye. A pity. It would bind him to us. He sees too many people as his now." For a moment she eyed Avienda up and down. "I will have Farron look at you. His great father is my sister's son. You have other duties to the people than learning to be a wise one. Those hips were made for babes." Avienda stumbled over an upraised paving stone and just caught herself short of falling. I will think on him when there is time," she said breathlessly. "I have much to learn yet of being a wise one, and Farron is Sayadun, and the Black Eyes have vowed not to sleep beneath roof or tent until Cooladin is dead." Cooladin was Sayadun. The leathery-faced wise one nodded as though everything had been settled. "You, young Aes Sedai, you know the Karakarn well, it is said. Will he do as he has threatened? Hang even a clan chief?"
"I think, maybe, that he will."
More quickly, Egwene added, "But I am sure he can be brought to see reason." She was not sure of any such thing, or even that it was reason. What he had said sounded only just, but justice would do him no good if he found the others turning against him as well as the Shido. Cyrilia glanced at her in surprise, then turned a gaze on the chiefs around Ran's horse that should have knocked the lot of them flat. "You mistake me. He must show that mangy pack of wolves that he is the chief wolf. A chief must be harder than other men, young Aes Sedai, and the Karakarn harder than other chiefs. Every day a few more men and even maidens are taken by the bleakness, but they are the soft outer bark of the ironwood. What remains is the hard inner core, and he must be hard to lead them." Egwene noticed that she did not include herself or the other wise ones among those who would be led. Muttering to herself about mangy wolves, Cyrilia strode ahead and soon had all the wise ones listening as they walked. Whatever she was saying, it did not carry.
"Who is this Farron?" Egwene asked. "I've never heard you speak of him. What does he look like?"
Frowning at Cyrilia's back, more than half hidden by the women clustered around her, Avienda spoke absently.
"He looks much like Ruark, only younger, taller, and more handsome, with much redder hair. For over a year he has been trying to attract Denyla's interest, but I think she will teach him to sing before she gives up the spear.
I don't understand.
Do you mean to share him with Denyla?
It still felt odd, speaking so casually of that.
Avienda stumbled again and stared at her.
Share him? I want no part of him. His face is beautiful, but he laughs like a braying mule and picks at his ears.
But from the way you talked to Cyrilia, I thought you liked him. Why didn't you tell her what you just told me?
The other woman's low laugh sounded pained.
Egwene, if she thought I was trying to balk in this, she would make the bridal wreath herself and drag both Farron and me by the neck to be wed. Have you ever seen anyone say no to Cyrilia? Could you?
Egwene opened her mouth to say that of course she could, and promptly closed it again. Making Nynaeve step back was one thing, and trying the same with Cyrilia quite another. It would be like standing in the path of a landslide and telling it to stop. To change the subject, she said,
I will speak to Amys and the others for you.
Not that she really thought it would do much good now. The right time had been before it began. At least Avienda saw the impropriety of the situation finally.
Perhaps, if we go to them together, I am sure they will listen.
No, Egwene, I must obey the wise ones. Jito requires it. Just as if she had not been asking for intercession a moment earlier. Just as if she had not all but begged the wise ones not to make her sleep in Rand's tent.
But why is my duty to the people never what I wish? Why must it be what I would rather die before doing?
Avienda, no one is going to make you marry or have babies.
Not even Cyrilia.
Egwene wished she had sounded a bit less limp on that last.
You do not understand, the other woman said softly, and I cannot explain it to you.
She gathered her shawl around her and would not speak of it further. She was willing to discuss their lessons, or whether Cooladin would turn and give battle, or how marriage had affected Milane, who seemed to have to work at being prickly now, or anything at all, except what it was that she could not or would not explain.